Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Avianca Group's Q2 2024 performance call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode, and we will be opening for questions following the presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your phone keypad. Please note this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to your host, Maria Ricardo, Investor Relations. The floor is yours.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. With me today are Adrian Neuhauser, Chief Executive Officer of Abra Group, Frederico Pedreira, Avianca's Chief Executive Officer, Rohit Philip, Avianca's Chief Financial Officer, Gabriel Oliva, Avianca's Chief Operating Officer and Avianca Cargo CEO, and Matt Vincett, LifeMiles CEO. Financial statements for the period ended June 30, 2024, and the presentation that we will show you today are available at our investor site. Today's conference call is being broadcast, and the replay will be available at the same site shortly after the end of the call. Before we proceed, I would like to remind you that during this call, management will make statements or remarks that may be forward-looking statements and may include but are not limited to financial projections or other statements of the company's plans, objectives, expectations, or intentions. These matters involve certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected or suggested. Today, the call will start with an overview of the state of the business, and then we'll continue with the second quarter 2024 financial performance. As always, our prepared comments will be followed by a question and answer session. With that, let me turn the call over to Adrian.
Thank you, Maria Cristina, and thank you everyone for joining us today. We'll start the presentation on slide two, please, operator. Today we'd like to show you what we've done in a quarter that has been particularly challenging, and we'll talk about that in a sec. On cost management, which as we've mentioned to you historically is key to our business and we believe is ultimately our core differentiator, long-term strategic advantage, and enables us to be less cyclical, we've continued to manage CASK to what we believe is an industry-leading CASK in our region, in spite of inflationary pressures, as you're all aware, and in spite of the continued strength of the Colombian peso, which also creates some additional challenges there that we've worked through and that Rohit will speak to in a few minutes. However, as you're all aware, we made a strategic decision in the fourth quarter of last year to grow the company pretty dramatically. We did that for two reasons. One was to replace capacity that had left the market with two airlines that had left, and the reallocation of the slots in domestic Colombia after that crisis. But the second was a decision by the authorities to increase the number of operations per hour that were being assigned in our core airport in Bogota, and our decision to take our proportional market share there and ensure that we protect those slots as a strategic asset for the years to come. With those two things and with our competitors doing basically the same, just to give you a sense of what we're talking about, second quarter capacity 24 versus second quarter capacity 23 is up nearly 30%. And with that, we've obviously seen some excess supply challenges that have led to yield pressures. Our capacity year on year is up 16% through our network. But as I said, when you're looking just at domestic Colombia, the figure is actually 26%. So with that, again, we'll talk about it in a second. EBITDA was an 18.8% margin. So that compares obviously negatively to last year. It is still a very high margin for us historically, and in particularly our seasonally weakest quarter. So continuing to drive the business forward, continuing to hold margins up high versus historical levels, but obviously a challenging quarter. The CASK ex fuel, again, we've managed to continue to bring down. It's at 3.9 cents. Our cash balance holding strong at $928 million. And our debt continuing to hold at around 3.3 times, notwithstanding the pretty significant increase in our fleet that was necessary to drive the capacity growth that we mentioned. In addition to that, we are starting to drive yields up by re-entering markets where we believe we had left room, in particular premium revenue. So after the strong performance that we've seen in our European business class, we've started extending business class services to our wide-body operation in the Americas. And based on the success of that, we've recently reintroduced business class on select routes in narrow bodies. Turning to the next page, slide 3, LifeMiles continued to add value to us. Cash EBITDA contribution was up 38% versus the same quarter last year to $39 million, and our gross billings grew by nearly 21% to reach nearly $60 million at June 30th. And cargo revenues continued to be ahead of business plan, $150 million during the quarter. It's a decrease due to yields and also to some capacity that shrank as we continued to work through the refleeting of our Mexican subsidiary. We continue to lead the flower market from Bogota, Medellin during Mother's Day season, and we are seeing relative yields versus our competitors pick up pretty significantly as we continue to premiumize the service we provide there. So key takeaways that, I want to highlight, continued cost containment, continued CASK dropping in spite of inflationary pressures and in spite of a strong Colombian peso. We believe that's structural and it's a key differentiator. We are working through what we think is excess capacity in the market. We see that being absorbed over the rest of the year. To give you some sense of what this is relative to peak Colombia, the capacity this year will be up 6% versus 2022, which was the highest year on record for capacity in domestic Colombia. We see growth stabilizing into 2025. So with that, I'll hand it over to Fred, who will take over on page 4.
Thank you very much, Adrian. I will just start by mentioning a couple of highlights from the quarter. For second quarter, we started operating 70 routes, both domestic Colombia and international. We opened sales for a new European destination. It was Charles de Gaulle that started operating early July. We also increased our frequencies in some of our key markets. One is worth mentioning is the Bogotá-Madrid market, where we went from 3 to 4 frequencies, historically a core market for Avianca with a very good performance. We finished the quarter with 152 routes in 75 destinations. Also worth mentioning in the second quarter is we started the process of renewing our cargo fleet. We received our first P2F A330, and we are expecting two more by 2025. This is a key milestone for our cargo operation, as will allow us a more reliable operation with reduced costs compared to the fleet that we're operating today. As also Adrian mentioned, we reintroduced our business class service in the narrow body. We started with 11 markets out of Bogota, and this due to the very good results we had in the wide bodies Americas business class. We are optimistic, so we are already looking for new opportunities within the Americas to extend our business class service. Going forward to page 5, and just quickly mention our operational performance. Second quarter is a quarter where we normally face significant weather events in Colombia. So despite that, we closed the quarter with 82.5% on-time performance, our scheduled completion of 98.1, and we continue with a world-class performance in terms of mishandled baggage. You know, this is like what we call the core of our service, which, you know, get our passengers safe in time and with their luggages to their destination. Going to page 6 and talking a little bit about revenue metrics. And as Adrian mentioned, the second quarter was a pretty challenging quarter for us. We saw our PRASK went down by 7.4% compared to last year. That, in part driven by the fact that we've seen seasonality return to our business. Last year, we didn't have a low season in the second quarter. We saw it this year, plus the capacity issues that are a topic that Adrian mentioned. In terms of yields went down 6.8. Our load factor ended at 81% with a 16% growth in ASKs. Rohit, you want to take it from here from the cost?
Thank you. Thank you, Fred, and good morning, everyone. On slide 7, start on the cost side. As Adrian mentioned, we're proud of the cost management we've been able to demonstrate here, and we had a CASK ex fuel of 3.9 cents in line with 2Q23, in spite of the impact of both foreign exchange and also a lower stage length. So just some context here: when we gave guidance for CASK at the beginning of the year, we guided to 3.8 to 4.0, which means a midpoint of 3.9, with a sensitivity on the foreign exchange rate, which we mentioned. So if you use the sensitivity, the implied guidance would have been 4.02. So 3.9 is well inside that, and we've done that with several hundred cost initiatives across the company that we continue to sort of manage. As you all know, the big structural changes to the business model we've already implemented. So continued cost management is really about lots of small initiatives and creating a cost culture across the company, and so that's what's driving the cost performance. Total passenger CASK was 5.9 cents, again in line with last year, in spite of a slightly higher fuel cost year over year. If you go to slide 8 on cargo. Cargo revenues year over year were moderated about 6.7% lower than last year. This is in line with what we have always sort of signaled and contemplated previously, and as evidenced even in the original emergence business plan, we had an expectation that cargo revenues would moderate, and certainly we've seen that. Having said that, We are seeing them sort of revenues now stabilize sort of at the pre-pandemic levels, but nonetheless it was slightly lower year over year. Moving to slide 9 and life miles, you can see a strong year over year performance with life miles. We grew third party gross billings, which is the middle chart on the page, by 21%, with 59 million in third-party gross billings, which also got us back to pre-pandemic levels. The cash EBITDA also again returned to pre-pandemic levels with a significant year-over-year growth as well. So very good trends in Life Miles performance. If you go to slide 10. And look at consolidated EBITDA. As Adrian mentioned, we were 221 million in EBITDA for the quarter at a 18.8% margin, which is lower than last year's EBITDA in the same quarter of 271 million. Really explained by the points that Adrian and Fred talked about, which is the seasonality and the impact of pricing based on the extra supplies, particularly in domestic Colombia, obviously offset by our cost management that has still allowed us to generate almost 19% margins in the quarter. If you go to slide 11 and cash flows, our cash balance of $928 million in the quarter, we ended the quarter with $928 million. The cash flow chart shows sort of the cash flow after the $221 million in EBITDA. It's really the corporate debt, aircraft leases, and CapEx. If you combine that, that's going to be in line with the guidance I've given for the whole year. So it's sort of in the run rate between the 1 to 1.1 billion that we'd given for the year. If you look at the three charts, the three numbers combined, and also just a reminder that on the corporate debt side, this is the quarter we make semi-annual debt payments on our bonds, which is $76 million each time. And so the $110 million of corporate debt includes, obviously, the semi-annual payment of $76 million this quarter. So if I move from slide 11 to slide 12 and looking at debt, you can see net debt at the end of the quarter was $3.9 billion. A year-over-year increase based on sort of the additional aircraft that we've added to the fleet to facilitate the growth, but we've managed to hold leverage virtually flat in this time period at 3.3 times. And with that, I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. I'll hand it back over to our operator Jenny to start the Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now be opening the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone keypad now. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For any participants using speaker equipment, it might be necessary to pick up your handset before you press the keys. Please hold a moment whilst we poll for questions. Thank you. Your first question is coming from Mike Linenberg of Deutsche Bank. Mike, your line is live.
Oh, yeah. Hey, good morning, everybody. I guess I'm just going to focus in on the capacity initially. The 30% year over year, what is that as we look out, you know, over the next couple quarters, do you guys have a sense of the competitive capacity looks like in domestic Colombia? Do we see it moderate? Where are we at on that?
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for joining. That's a really good question. Look, I think the basic answer is yes, it does moderate, right? One of the reasons that we decided to take the scale jump we did, right? To remind you, right, our network went from 600 flights a day to 750 flights a day in December, right? And the reason we decided to do that was because we believe that it's a unique opportunity to capture market in Colombia. Ultimately, you know, Bogota Airport is, we believe, above capacity, right? They declare they declare basically programs every day to pull back capacity from the capacity they've allocated. It's very hard to imagine them allocating more capacity. You know, Medellin is not slot controlled, but there isn't much room left there. And so we saw it as critical to our business to retain capacity. So did everyone else, right? So again, you know, the industry grew 28% second quarter, where we grew 26, right? This is a broad industry issue. When you see it coming into the fourth quarter, you're looking at about 18% growth, and then when you're looking into first quarter of next year, you're looking at single digit growth, and at that point most of it is driven by densification, right? Some low cost players continue to add, you know, flights kind of around the margin in Cali and other markets, but that's not going to create really relevant pricing pressure like what we're seeing now. Really around, you know, the pretty significant growth in Bogota.
Okay. Adrian, do you think that any of your competitors are actually making money in the domestic market right now? I mean, it would think
No, we're convinced that we are, you know, that we are the most or one of the most cost competitive, and you know, versus the ULCC that we're competing against, obviously pricing is pretty dramatically in our favor. Mm-hmm. And versus YTAM, you know, we think costs are pretty dramatically in our favor as well. So no, we don't think anyone's making money in the market. But it is the nature of this step change in capacity. And one thing that I probably didn't spend enough time on, Mike, but it's worth mentioning is, you know, it's the step change in capacity into what is seasonally the weakest quarter in Colombia, right? So combination of the two, in health, right?
Okay, great. And then just for a follow-up here, since I do have, Adrian, since I do have you, and from maybe this is almost more of an ABRA type, you know, from the perspective of ABRA, but, you know, seeing the commitment for the A350-900s, it looked like it read that those airplanes could either go to Avianca or Gol, which is very interesting because Gol doesn't fly wide bodies, but Brazil has lots of wide body opportunities in my view. As well as this Wamos acquisition, which to me that is a very low form. It's a low cost form of lift, incremental lift, which could also help you extend the network. So just two sort of strategic questions, if you could just touch on both and how you're thinking about it. And thanks for taking my questions.
No, thank you. And those are great questions. Look, Wamos is interesting to us. Largely because of what you said, right? It's a low cost, pretty hedged form of adding lift. It's lift we can move through our networks as ACMI. It also gives us a base in Europe, right? So we can, you know, with the Wamos acquisition, we have the ability to fly aircraft out of Europe and to rotate them through Europe eventually. That was the nature, in fact, of the conversation of using Wamos as a remedy taker in the Iberia Air Europa transaction that ultimately didn't pan out. But it's something we're still looking at, obviously in a smaller scale than it would have been as a remedy taker. So it gives us, you know, what we think is kind of zero cost lift in the sense that, you know, it's the Wamos is profitable. It's been profitable, I think, 19 out of its 21 years. And the two it wasn't profitable was during the pandemic. It's got a great ACMI business that it runs very well. The planes are deployed there. When we find opportunities to deploy them at greater margins into our network, we can do that. And like you said, it gives us this incremental lift. And I think the other piece is what I mentioned. It gives us a Europe base. The 350s were the result, you know, even though it looked it looked quick. They were the result of about a year and a half of analysis of a couple of things. One, you know, whether we thought or not that there were opportunities for more wide-body flying in our network, both at Avianca and Abra, and the answer is yes. And then what the right fleet type is for that. And so what we're looking at with the 350s, and this is true of both Brazil, but also Colombia. In certain specific routes, is that we have feed into some very, very thick routes between Latin America and Europe, right? In Colombia, there's obviously the connectivity between largely Bogota, but also Medellin and Cali, right, to Madrid, And in Brazil, you have the ability to consolidate all of the Gol feed into, you know, the obvious core routes there into Portugal and into Spain, where there is a lot of those are very thick routes, right? And so when you look at gauge and you think about, you know, gauge plays in your favor as long as you can fill the seats, you know, ultimately. The decision that we took was that plane brings a huge CASK advantage to thick routes, and because we have thick routes where we can play, you know, not oversupplying seats, we can play with frequency to basically keep the seat supply, you know, constant or even bring it down while upgauging. We decided that was the right play. Where those planes eventually go in the network depend on a couple of things, right? They won't be delivered for a few years, and so it'll depend on supply and demand dynamics. It'll also depend on conversations with pilot groups to see how we ensure that those planes are deployed in a way that doesn't erode our current cost advantage.
Great, very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Your next question is coming from Neil Glynn of Air Control Tower. Neil, your line is live.
Good morning, everybody. If I could ask two questions, please. The first one on the premium strategy. I wonder if you could touch on the evolution of distribution of tickets, relationships with TMCs and GDSs. I'm conscious, given the business model pivot, maybe there's some remedial work to do, or are you optimally set up at this point in time to push premium and corporate revenue? And then the second question, and maybe this is linked, I guess speed bumps due to oversupply obviously happen regularly, too regularly in the industry, and you were very clear at the first quarter that seasonality would be restored to some semblance of normalcy at this point. But when I look at it, despite a good EBITDA margin in a historical context, your PBT performance in the second quarter was weak versus pre-pandemic, which illustrates maybe a higher bar because of higher aircraft financing costs. I wonder if you follow that logic as you reflect on your earnings power with your new business model, does it give you any pause for thought? I'm conscious that a lot of low-cost carriers around the world are suffering converting EBITDA margins to PBT because of what they're paying for airplanes. Thank you.
Sure. Let me take a stab at that, and then Rohit and Fred can compliment. And thanks Neil, for joining. On the first one, you know, I think much has been said by different players about what our pivot has been. Our pivot has not been, from a distribution standpoint, as dramatic as you might think, right? We're distributing 50% of our sales through our website, and we're obviously proud of that. The rest is distribution through traditional channels, although we've reduced the cost of those pretty significantly, both by changing the way we incent travel agencies, but also by reducing reliance on GDSs and moving to NDC and things like that, right? So we've retained pretty significant relationships with travel agencies, and in fact, what I would tell you is the decision to push premium revenue has largely been a discussion driven by them and partnership with them, because one of the things that unfortunately, you know, we were unable to achieve what's now proven to be a pretty long testing period is a sell through of what we had as a premium product, right, which is effectively a big seat in many flights and things like that, right? What we realized is that because we do have corporate customers, because we do rely on traditional distribution for half our sales, et cetera, it was very difficult to get the revenue you wanted out of those seats because you were making the customer go through rigmaroles, right? You were asking the customer to basically, you know, call their travel agency, buy the ticket on the travel agency, and then either call our call center, go to our website, you know, pay for the upsell, then try to get, you know, their corporate travel to reimburse them the upsell, et cetera. So it was a very customer unfriendly way of doing it, right? So by rebundling it and putting it back into the GDS as a class, you know, we saw a very, very dramatic and very quick pickup in the sales. So what I'd tell you is it's the other way around. Now, to be fair, and not oversell that, right? When we came into Avianca in 2019, right, one of the things that we diagnosed is that Avianca had a much smaller share than you would think in the corporate market, in particular outside Colombia, right? So for us, this is a great opportunity that we'd left on the table. It's one that we're grabbing and we're recovering it quickly, but it's not today a business of a scale similar to our competitors, and that's not because of kind of what you allude to in terms of distribution relationships, et cetera. Those are actually, you know, frankly, better than they've ever been, but it's more, you know, how we position the brand, how we work through that over time. So it is a great shift for us, but it's not It's not a wholesale turn, and it'll create incremental opportunities, you know, for the next few years, and you'll see it happen. But it doesn't sort of change the fundamentals. And the fundamentals, we continue to believe, and I think that's a little different from what you've seen in other markets, right? One of the reasons we did not go, you know, the narrative we give people, and there's no great term for this, right? And everybody hates the term hybrid because it means too many different things, and we don't use that, right? But the narrative we give is, look, we are an extremely cost-focused carrier, but we keep a lot of tools in our tool chest, right? Whether it be long-haul flying, which has performed really well for us, whether it be business class, which on the long haul had performed very well for us, and so we're bringing it back everywhere else, whether it be frequent flyer, whether it be cargo, right? We have not driven to simplicity over having multiple tools because we've always believed, and we've said this on other calls, that, you know, being a one-trick pony is a dangerous thing, right? So I don't think we've painted ourselves into the corner that people have in other places because again we have many many tools to react. If you were to look at performance kind of across our network, what you would see is basically the entire network is performing really really well, other than domestic Colombia, which is not performing well at all, and you know which is where we see this massive capacity problem that is, you know, we think hard to overcome until the market absorbs it. There's an obvious question that comes out of that, and I'm just going to posit it and answer it, which is, okay, well, if you know that the market's oversupplied, why don't you pull back capacity? And the answer is, because we believe if we do, the capacity doesn't leave. We pull it back, and someone else puts it in, because again, It's a market that's basically full, right? It's a market where there's very few slots left, and you know there's kind of clear visibility to demand converging to this excess supply over the next 12, 18, 20 months, whatever you want. And at that point, this stabilizing and being a long-term asset. And so we weren't the only ones that grabbed our fair share. Everyone else, I think, did too. And I think it's a shared view, but we have to wait for demand to grow into supply there before there's much that we can do. Now, as to the speed bumps, what I would tell you is we think we have our fleet as to the gap between EBITDA and EBT, we believe we have our fleet at extremely competitive costs, and that's not just because of the renegotiations we did during our Chapter 11, but it also has to do it will have to do as the orders start delivering with our order book that we think is very attractive. What I would tell you is I think the gap there is driven more by interest, and that's obviously something that I think, you know, plays negatively against us versus our peers, and that we'll work towards fixing in the next few months, which is we are more levered, right? And by being more levered, there's more drag from interest, and our cost of capital is higher too. So it's not just proportional drag, but it's ultimately escalated drag from interest. So I think that's what's really driving the gap more than ownership costs, and we're aware of that, and you know we have a plan for that.
Yep, and just to add, I mean, I think we've always talked about the fact that we see sort of the ideal, while we've delevered the company significantly, we started, you know, obviously significantly through the restructuring, but even at emergence, we were 4.9 times levered. We've delevered to 3.3 times now, but we definitely see sort of a target leverage more like in the low twos. And when you get to that level, that sort of lets you drop a lot more EBITDA to the bottom line. And we think that that happens. I think obviously the last couple of quarters were stressed with the increased growth. There's also a couple of minor things in there that affect, like we've got the three 787s that we added to the fleet that are not yet generating revenue, but we have the you know, the debt and some payments related to those aircraft. So there's some temporary sort of things that will reverse itself, but I think the bigger structural thing is to get closer to low twos in leverage, which would then get us to be able to structurally have more EBITDA drop to the bottom line.
And on the first question, I would just add that on the premium products, that as I mentioned before, we're seeing a pretty good performance, and part of that is an important part of that is driven by our traditional distribution and by our partners. So clearly, it's a product that is has seen a good reception from our partners, in particular travel agencies, and they've been fundamental in the deployment of this new product.
Thank you all for such color.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you very much. Your next question is coming from Chris Reddy of BNP Paribas. Chris, your line is live.
Oh, great. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking the time. I just had a couple of quick calls. Was the minor amount of software we saw, is it just solely attributed to the Colombian market?
It is, Chris. Thanks for asking that. It is. It's, again, the rest of our network is performing, frankly, on a net basis, I think, better than we had expected. So we're not seeing, we're not seeing this. We are seeing seasonality, which we had expected to see, but that,
yeah.
Again, that was projected, and that, we're seeing kind of the normal seasonal patterns that we see in different parts of our network. But what I would tell you is net of that effect, we're seeing the network perform very, very, very positively versus what we would expect. Now, and again, that was expected. Where we're seeing a problem is Colombia. And again, it's a problem that to some extent we jumped into, and we did not think it would be, we did not think it would be without consequences, but it is a pretty dramatic softening in that market. Now, what I will tell you is, again, passenger numbers, the height of the market was 2022. Passenger numbers are up versus 2022, so in spite of a slow Colombian economy, passenger numbers are growing. What you have is, supply growth exceeding demand growth, and we need demand to catch up.
Right, and I mean, it sounds as though, or at least my understanding is that, organically that the demand will grow into the capacity that's there. Obviously, capacity can change, but is there a reason the authorities expanded this? Did they have any sort of goal in mind?
So it's a great question. So two things. One, capacity can't change that much anymore. Certainly not in Bogota, right? So Bogota is the airport with the most ground delay programs in the world. It's basically every day, right? And mm-hmm. So the authorities have allocated more slots than air traffic is actually able to manage. Why they did it? Well, because there was political pressure to, increase the number of operations, the number of operators, what have you. But there was no investment behind that, right? There was no, and we were actually part of a study that IATA did on trying to figure out what the structural capacity is at the airport today, and then what a path is to increasing it. And the conclusions of that study, which we shared with the government, were that structural capacity is pretty much around where it was before they stepped it up, right? So somewhere between 66 and 68 operations, they stepped it to 74 per hour, right? So we believe the airport, and again, reality is proving that we're right, that the airport's overallocated. Is there a path to more operations? There is, and we would be cooperative in that, but it requires investment in technology, in air traffic control, in aprons, in gates, et cetera. So in the way the airspace is utilized. So we don't see any significant capacity growth in the horizon after this. What we do see is demand, being reasonably stable and growing. One of the really interesting things about the Colombian market, right, is how resilient demand is, and it has to do with the geography of the country, and we always point this out, right? The country has bad rail infrastructure, no rail infrastructure, bad road infrastructure, no river infrastructure, and so communication between and it is a country that is uniquely for Latin America, sort of distributed with three large cities, dozens of medium cities and hundreds of small cities. So it does require connectivity, and the connectivity is by air. And so the demand for air travel has limited substitution. And so you see kind of pretty sustained growth there, even through economic cycles. So again, we expect to see demand converge. We expect to see very limited incremental supply in the core markets. People can connect. Smaller markets where there's still openings in the space, but really there isn't that much you can do in peak hours in Bogota and Medellin anymore. So.
Oh, great, thanks. And then just two other quick questions. One, I guess page 11 in the CapEx, you say you're going to get $42 million of the $75 million you spent back. Is that just what is that from?
Yeah, so that's just what we had historically. That's essentially lessor contributions. So where okay. We had a bunch of things where we had capex being spent, and we would get reimbursed by the lessor as part of the deal with the aircraft. And so that's just what it is. So we spend the money and then get the capex reimbursement back with the
okay,
project.
Okay, great. So net cash would effectively, assuming there were the timing discrepancy, you would have had a bit of a cash build instead of a slight drain.
That's correct.
That's right. And, okay. and Chris, those deals are pretty common, right? Because the lessor looks at the plane as their collateral, so they'll put the money up, but they want to know that the value has already gone into the aircraft before they put the money up, right? So.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. We don't normally get this level of transparency, so. It's good to see. And then the last question, you mentioned that, you want to have your leverage, reduce. What are sort of the ideas that you're thinking about to do that?
So Chris, I think obviously the first and foremost is using free cash flow to continue to delever. Obviously the last couple of quarters have been challenging to be able to do that, but we expect that, like we have done the last 2 years, we should be able to continue that trajectory going forward. So that would obviously be whatever free cash flow we'd be able to use, and EBITDA growth would automatically help us delever. The second part is, we do think over time, one of the things we've always been focused on is, in an equity transaction, in the event we did an IPO, the use of proceeds we've always thought to be used for to pay down debt. So that would give you that extra sort of turbocharge, if you will, on the trajectory to delever. So those are kind of the at a high level the tools we think can get us to the target levels.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much. Your next question is coming from Ian Snyder of JP Morgan. Ian, your line is live.
Good morning, Avianca team. Thanks for taking my question. Apologies if this was already mentioned. I got disconnected briefly, but we were on one of your competitors' calls yesterday, and a large topic was liability management. Do you have any plans to do liability management across the capital structure this year, or even buybacks of bonds in the open market? And that's it for me.
Hi, Ian. It's Rohit. At this point, we're not actively looking at liability management. I think as I've always signaled, once the cash builds significantly beyond $1 billion, we'd look to deploy that cash to pay down debt. But at the current levels, we're not actively looking at liability management. But it's something that we would look at as the cash balance builds.
Great, thanks a lot. That's it for me.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you very much. Your next question is coming from Michael Kaufman of Redwood Capital. Michael, your line is live.
Thank you. Hey, Adrian. Hey, Rohit. Thank you. Thank you for the call today. A few questions. The first is, do you have a sense as to how long it'll take for demand to catch up in the Colombian domestic market?
I wish I had a crystal ball, Mike. It's a great question. I mean, look, what we're seeing is relative growth tempering, right? Just because of, you know, the year on year jump happened in December of last year, right? So by the time you get to the end of this year and into next year, you know, growth in supply slows down pretty significantly, right? So I don't want to speculate. It's not a one quarter thing, but it's also not a 5 year thing, right? You can drive a truck through that through those bookends, but what I'll tell you is, again, it's starting to happen. It's just, you know, it'll take as long as it takes.
And in terms of the capacity pressure, it's the domestic Colombian market. If you look at Colombia to intra-South America and into Europe and North America, are you seeing capacity pressure there? And if you can make any other comments on, performance is very strong also. Yeah.
No, it's a great question, right? Again, we've grown pretty dramatically throughout the network, and again, yeah. I want to say it's like 15%. Hang on a sec, we've got the stats here. For the full network
for the year,
yeah,
the year today. Mm-hmm. So our forecast for the year, the last time we mentioned about for the year about 21%.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be lower than that.
Yeah.
Right. So I would say today that we expect the growth around 18 to 19.
So the entire network, right? If domestic Colombia is growing, you know, 25-26%, right? The entire network is growing mid to high teens, but everything else is performing. And in fact, you know, in some places, this is interesting because it goes back to the question that Neil asked, right? About do we lack tools because we've moved into lower costs? We think we have all the tools that, you know, we had previously. We just have a lower cost structure, and we're seeing, you know, places where we had some pretty significant competitive pressures, right? Like Central America actually recede and perform better. So what I would tell you is the rest of the network is good to better than expected, and it really is a domestic Colombia problem today.
And I would even add that even in markets where I see that the market is growing as a whole, like for instance Europe, where we have where we've seen competitors adding a lot of capacity, you know, our performance continues to be very good, mm-hmm. and despite mm-hmm. that additional capacity increase mm-hmm. from our competitors, mm-hmm. Europe is a good example.
And when you say performing well, are you still seeing strong unit economics? So, you know,
yep.
after rent
yep.
in those other markets.
Yep, yep. We're seeing margins hold steady again, or better than what we projected. Right. Again, that's exactly what we mean. Right.
Got it. Thank you. Is there any way to quantify the seasonality? It's a little hard for us on the outside. I know it's hard for us to compare historically because it's a very different airline, and we do hear it continuously from your peers, both you compete with and you don't, that seasonality is back and it's different than it was pre-COVID. Is there any way for you to quantify the impact of seasonality in this quarter? And then secondly, can you remind us in this, you know, new environment what the peak versus trough quarters are?
So you know, overall, the traditionally the weakest quarter is the second quarter, right? And the reason for that is that you're not impacted by none of the high season months in the second quarter. So that's like the overall view, you know. Some changes a little bit, but you know, between March, April, then you have a second, you know, slowdown traditionally that happens between September and October. But when you look at the quarters,
because in the third quarter you have July that is a strong month, and in the fourth quarter, and you're back to high season again. Of the four quarters, you know, second one is traditionally the most weak.
Second one's the worst. Yeah. Second one is consistently the worst. First quarter is consistently second worst, and then, you know, as Fred was saying, it's somewhere of a toss up between third and
third and fourth. Third and fourth are roughly similar, depending on the year.
Yeah. Sure. So third quarter you have July, fourth quarter you have December.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we've done analysis then, and it's not. We'll happily do it and circulate it to you, but I'm not sure that we've tried to quantify how much of this is seasonality versus not. It'll obviously be easier to tell once we're through third quarter, but we'll do some back of the envelope work and share.
Great, thanks. And then two quick housekeeping ones on slide 11, that corporate debt cash outflow of 110, does that include the Life Miles amortization payment?
Yes, it does. It includes the $10 million amortization payment on Life Miles. It includes the interest on Life Miles debt. It includes the $76 million coupon on the bonds. It includes everything, principal and interest on all the debt. Yeah.
Great. And can you disclose how much the rent is on the, or the aircraft payments is on the 3787s that are not currently flying?
Yeah, it's in the order of I don't want to give out the monthly lease rent. It's a pretty good rate when you think about a market rate of the monthly lease rent, but think about 3787s. Monthly lease rents that's going out the door without generating revenue, but lower than what today's market rate.
Yeah, think about what you think a good lease rate is for a 788, and then multiply that by three, and you're going to be pretty smart.
Yep.
So,
great.
Thank you
very much.
It's not a significant drag, right? So it's got we need to place more.
Right. I think what I was trying to get at was not so focused on what you're paying specifically for that plane. I understand the competitive dynamics there. I just wanted to get a sense for how much of the what is the drag, or are there other drag items that pulled the 221 of EBITDA down this quarter, similar to the, I think, the 13-ish or so that you mentioned last quarter.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you very much. Just a reminder, if anyone has any remaining questions, you can press star one on your phone keypad. Our next question is coming from Lewis Corson of Millennium. Lewis, your line is live.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the question. Just curious how the IPO process is going so far, and what the expected use of proceeds is across the capital structure, and then the potential timing for the IPO.
I don't think we can say much about any of that, right? I think our lawyers would limit us to what we've already put out as press releases in terms of we're getting a document on file and we're looking at opportunities. I think that's the extent of what we're allowed to say.
Unfortunately, Lewis, as you probably can imagine, we've been advised not to be able to talk about more than that about that process.
Okay, understood. And I guess the second question is more of a domestic market question. What's the state of the Colombian consumer right now, from your perspective?
It's not great, right? I mean, again, you've got Colombia, income per capita basically growing negatively, right? So the consumer is not in a great spot, and that's why I point out that even in spite of that, you're actually seeing passenger counts go up, right? So and that speaks to the core need of flying in that market. It can't be substituted by getting in a car, right? And therefore, we think it speaks to the resilience of that market. But it is. Price sensitive. It is, a weak economy today, and whether we like it or not, we are growing capacity pretty significantly into that. So, yeah, we all hope for better times for the economy, but it's not great today.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Well, we appear to have reached the end of our question and answer session. I will now hand back over to Adrian for closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you, operator. Thank you all for joining the call today. As we mentioned, it has been a challenging quarter. There's no secret there. You can see it. You know, we're proud of our continued execution on costs. We continue to believe that's critical to our long-term success. We believe that we continue to believe that the decision to deploy the capacity into Colombia that we did and to retain our slot share and market share is the right one for the long term. But obviously, you can see the challenges that we're facing with that. You'll see us over the next few quarters as we work through that. We are happy with the traction we are getting on some of our up-yielding initiatives, and that'll be another tool that we'll continue to deploy as we work through this. And we continue to execute on our plan. So thank you very much, and we'll see you again in about 3 months.
Thank you very much. This does conclude today's conference call. You may disconnect your phone lines at this time and have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. Thanks for your participation.